Hanson Scotty, 97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network. The great Craig Buller Jack's going to join us coming up here in just a moment.
Yes. It's my Friday. Every Friday.
I know, right? Every life's a little bit better when you get a chance to chat with Buller. Might be a lot of things wrong in the world. Might be all kinds of issues, but you get to spend 10 minutes with Buller, your life's better for it.
Are we going to talk to him about the Jazz at all?
Yeah, we could. Unless you don't want to. What would you like to pick the brain of Craig Buller Jack on?
Ask him the question at the beginning of the show.
Oh, okay.
And I don't even care if people...
All right. Craig Buller Jack joins us now. Buller, how are you?
Hey, Buller.
Scotty Hands, I'm good. How are you guys?
We're debating how much jazz we want to talk about with you today.
Zero. No.
We can do that.
Throw darts at the board. Let's go.
All right. Well, okay. We had a little bit of a debate at the beginning of the show. And you're a big movies guy. You watch a lot of movies.
Right.
Are you a fan of Sandra Bullock?
You know, there's a couple of movies I like with her.
Hold on.
Okay.
Because my next question is going to be, when you think of let's just kind of maybe limit it to the 90s or kind of that era.
Okay.
Hans and I had a debate. Well, the whole station ended up getting into it. Ben and Jake Hatch and everybody had opinions, and everybody told Hans he was wrong. But Hans has a quintessential, number one, no doubt about it, best ever Sandra Bullock movie.
Okay.
I want to know what yours is to see if that matches up with Hans.
First movie that comes to mind.
First movie when you think Sandra Bullock.
I was just going to spit out Proposal.
Is that with that's with Ryan Reynolds?
Yeah, when they were up in Alaska, Betty White.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, she's a grandma, and they kind of do a scam. She's Canadian. They're going to do a marriage, and of course, they end up,
falling in love.
Right over the weekend. Right, okay, but it worked.
Okay, yeah, is there a Sandra Bullock action film that comes to mind?
The only one I can think of off the top of my head is when she was she was a cop. And they put her in as the in the Miss America pageant, right? Oh,
Miss Congeniality.
For just a minute.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of.
No, that is...
Sorry. That's the only two I can think of right off the top.
So we went... we had Speed. It was kind of what
okay.
we...
No, that's...
That with...
Keanu Reeves and the bus.
Keanu Reeves, yeah.
And then there was...
Hope Floats is
another one that a lot of people said. Jake Hatch had Miss Congeniality. Jake Scott went with A Time to Kill, which is a very good role of hers.
Ooh, yes. That is a good one. Yeah,
I killed him, and I hope they burn in hell.
Yeah.
But Hans went with...
Yes.
Demolition Man.
Really?
Don't laugh.
Hans, why does that movie stick out? With Sandra Bullock.
Number one, it's the first time anybody was really introduced to Sandra Bullock. Number two, it's the biggest, I think it's the biggest hit that she was a part of.
That's not going to, that's no way that exceeded Speed.
Yeah, Speed Demolition was good. Man. I forgot about that. Demolition Man, huh?
Demolition Man is much more viewed than Speed. I can almost say that as a fact. More people have watched and know Demolition Man than Speed.
All right, so
the only way to solve this, as you know, would have to be an Instapoll.
we actually already did that. We honestly took phone calls on this.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
How'd it turn out?
And it did not turn out in Han's favor. All right,
ooh,
so the
boy,
box
at all.
Hey, the box office on Demolition Man was a very good $159 million.
Thank you.
That is very good. Now let's see what Speed.
Thank you.
And the
Proposal and
Point
Miss Congeniality did.
Speed came out a year later.
So Demolition Man was 189 million.
Oh, hold on a second here.
Or did you say 199?
159.
Oh,
59.
All right. So Speed movie. Hold on here.
By the way, Blind Side is in there. She was good in the Blind Side.
This didn't work out for you very well. The box office on Speed was $350 million.
Whoa, big.
They put a lot of advertising into that Demolition Man with Taco Bell and stuff.
Yeah, they did.
I'm telling you, they put a lot into it.
They
just didn't work.
Telling me, Lloyd, that they lost money, actually.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, they did, Bowler.
Okay.
Bowler, come on, man.
You know what's great about your show is you guys is that these little topics come up, and you know I find them just they're gripping. I'm waiting for Scotty to really run through the box office numbers right now.
Well, first of all, Buller, this came up about 15 minutes before the show started because this individual that we were talking about looks like Sandra Bullock, and I said, "Who is that girl that played on Demolition Man?" And Lloyd was like, "What?" And Scotty goes, "Sandra Bullock?" And then they just full-on started attacking me. And then Scotty started the show with an Instapoll. And we had three people that came on, and none of them even knew of Demolition Man.
By the way, the movie that came out a year after Demolition Man, the romantic comedy While You Were Sleeping, grossed $182 million at the box office.
Oh, that one was terrible, too.
Actually, I liked Where You Were Sleeping, While You Were Sleeping. I didn't hate that movie.
That's kind of an interesting concept, wasn't it? Did a guy get, was he out?
Or yes. Yeah, so she always had some crush on a dude, and then he got knocked out, and then she claimed that that they were engaged, and then got to meet the family, and then she fell in love with his brother.
Right, right.
Also known as Overboard.
You know what? There are some comparisons there, actually.
There are.
It's not bad.
Yeah.
Overboard, far better movie.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah,
Kurt Russell's best.
Not that they made a remake like a couple years ago. Not good.
Didn't even watch it.
No, Kurt Russell and Goldie Hawn.
Buller, have you ever watched a remake that you liked? Had you watched the new remake of True Grit? And I know
that was good.
I didn't like it.
You didn't like the remake of True Grit?
I didn't really. No, because you know I go back. I like the Glenn Campbell character. You know, and I thought John. He won an Oscar for that. Maybe it was kind of a you know, felt sorry for you, Oscar, but, you know, he was good in it. I think he's been better in other movies, but I think it's tough to redo movies, you know, because it's especially if it's been highly acclaimed, you know, why go back and, you know, like Ghostbusters. Okay, they did Ghostbusters 2, then they tried to flip it with, you know, a new cast and a new angle. I heard there's another kind of a prequel of Ghostbusters coming out. Is that right?
That's a good question. I'm not sure. The reboot that they made a few years ago was not good. I have not seen the follow-up that they just...
I did.
Did you like it?
Loved it.
Really?
Remember, I raved about it.
Oh, that's right.
Which, I guess, people don't care about my movie takes anymore.
You know what it is? I think it's the original characters, and can you remove them from the equation and then just take on what the next, you know, the next movie and how the screenplay was written or the script was put into play, right? I mean, you have to kind of, you know, Bill Murray and Dan Aykroyd, come on. I mean, those are two iconic comedy figures in my life, and it's hard to say, oh, really? I'm going to watch that movie without those two because I relate the movie to them.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I get that. It's the same for me and Ralph Macchio with Karate Kid.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't just go and remake Karate Kid.
By the way, you watching Cobra Kai? They got a new season out.
No, I haven't. I watched the first season and liked it, and then quit.
Oh, yeah.
Did you watch any of the Karate Kid stuff, Boulder?
I watched the first one, and I thought it was good. Yeah, I had a great – yeah, all the characters again, even the tough kid.
Yeah.
I don't know his name.
Johnny.
But, you know, it's hard to replace that relationship with, you know, and the direction that – and see, I look at Ralph as the guy who was in Happy Days. Yeah.
That's as bad as the Demolition Man.
Yeah, because what you do is – and that's how a lot of actors get, you know, pigeonholed into a character.
Yeah.
And they can't ever break out of it because that's who you always relate that person to.
I had no idea he was in Happy Days. But the first time I saw him was in The Outsiders.
Okay, yeah.
So did he get The Outsiders opportunity off? Happy Days would have been pre-Outsiders,
Oh,
correct?
I would think so, yeah.
Oh, definitely, yeah. Yeah, he took off. He made great fame from Happy Days, and then he left, and some other guy picked up the kitchen duties.
Honestly, I didn't even know. If you would have asked me before this if Ralph Macchio was in Happy Days, I would have said no.
I wouldn't have known.
Honestly, yeah. I would have said no.
No, I wouldn't
have known. Yeah, one or two, maybe 3 years at the most. But see, he made a big there, and he left the show, and then that's where he picked up these movie roles.
Oh. All right, Bowler. We've stalled long enough.
I don't want to.
Tonight's the night. This isn't happening again tonight. They're going to cruise over Detroit, right? Tell me that's going to happen.
You know, I would think on paper, but yet we know what happened just a short time ago in Detroit. I mean, I think there's a pattern here of big leads that are lost, and you know, young players who have found some confidence against the Jazz defensively. Kate Cunningham was one of them who had a career night, 29 points up in Detroit, and it was just a blink of an eye. I mean, it was January 10th, so. You know, not much has changed since then. COVID, injuries. You know, I just saw that Rudy Gobert is questionable with a left ankle soreness. Holy cow, that would impact this game in a big way if he doesn't play. Because, again, the Jazz, as we know, they surround themselves with Rudy on the defensive end. The biggest issue of late has been the lack of defense that has been given by other players besides Rudy Gobert and taking on the responsibility of guarding your man. But I think the biggest concern is, you know, the lost leads, you know, even against Houston, you know, I thought the Jazz at one time looked good at 13, and then the second half came and they're outscored by 10. The Rockets, you know, launched 22 threes. There was a very little perimeter defense, but you still look at numbers and you go, heck, the Jazz scored 60 plus in the paint. They shared the ball, 25 plus assists. But yet the outcome is kind of the same, you know, and you have to, you're scratching your head. Is it defensive, you know, is it all about defense? Is it the fact that Gobert has been depended on for so many years that the lack of defending has been channeled into him, which is part, again, of what Quinn's plan is, because he's a three-time defensive player of the year. I get it. But you still have to play your own man. And have you lost that ability, or the player's not able to stay in front of some of these young guys who are 6'6", 6'8"? I think that's an interesting discussion point, right? And the other part of it that came up the other night in just a sit-down talk with, you know, with Locke and Boone and Big T and I, or, you know, what about, is there a pressure on this team that we don't realize, and especially at home? They play so well on the road, but the expectations that have been given to this team of being the year in the West, is it a title team? And do they feel that pressure? You know, look, they're human. I get it. But also it's negated sometimes by fans because of the salaries they make. And, you know, it's an interesting conversation of where the Jazz are in the mental mind frame, because last year you think about, well, you know, gosh, for 2 second round exits, so it makes sense you add a piece or two, and you think it's going to be the answer to a Western Conference championship and beyond. And, you know, at times it looked like they were unbeatable. I mean, the winning streak of 8 was so impressive. And then the Jazz are late in the game, guys, and this COVID, I guess, the peril that we're in, and that I guess some of the weaknesses have been shown, right? Mm-hmm. And it started with Gobert's departure. Now, you know, Donovan's going to miss his second straight game. And I think there's also a confidence factor here. And Hans, you can speak to it as a former pro. You think that the confidence is always there, but in reality, it can be lost, and it takes time to regain it.
It really can, especially if teammates are getting chippy with each other, and you know, if you're starting to lose team chemistry, things can really bend quickly, and you got to try to fix that as quick as you can. My concern is, if they don't beat Detroit, they could be staring down the barrel of a 10-game losing streak.
You know, if you
don't beat Detroit, you've got Golden State, Phoenix on the road, Phoenix at home, Memphis, Minnesota on the road, Denver, and Brooklyn.
Right.
That's the next 8 games or 7 games after that Detroit game. So if you don't get that win tonight, it could really get ugly on a 10-game losing streak.
Yeah, well, it could. I mean, it's a telling time because, again, you're getting – remember early part of the season, the Jazz were heavily front-loaded with Eastern Conference teams that they had very little trouble with, and now the schedule really gives you the first look, you know, at your high-level opponents in the West. And we saw Denver and won, and that was like, hey, well, you know, okay. win without Gobert, and they were able to kind of channel, the Jokic, and he got his points, but the rest of the team struggled. So everything, okay, we can survive this, and then it flips around again, and the consistency. But yeah, and I sense what you're talking about is this team has been, really heralded as a special team of tightness, friendship, and all on the same page for one common goal. I don't know if that's broken. I think it's questioned, but there's still some really good talent here. And the bottom line is who leads them out of the woods, so to speak. And that's the question, and I guess we're all kind of waiting for. I don't know if it's one particular player or you do it as a group. And, is there panic in the locker room? It's pretty tight-lipped, to be honest. I don't know. But your point is well taken. That is, if tonight doesn't go well, then you run into the Western Conference elite. And that's where the true test, everyone was waiting for. And if they're not full, if they don't have a full roster and they're not healthy and Donovan's still not back or Whiteside to back up Gobert, and, then you kind of scratch your head and go, wow, this could be a rough stretch. And it could be a defining moment, right, even before the All-Star game.
The great Craig Bullerjack joining us right here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone and the Zone Sports Network. So the Jazz have not had a full roster for quite some time, and it's really hard to look at it and say and evaluate a team. Like, let's say if you're Danny Ainge, okay, you're new on the job, you're trying to evaluate what you've got. You got trade deadline coming up here in a couple of weeks. And I think a lot of people, and myself included, are like, well, Danny Ainge is super aggressive. He's willing to cut ties at any given moment if he feels like it's going to make the team better. And that's kind of the MO he's had from his time in Boston. And I still think that's probably still part of his DNA. But I just don't know if there's been an opportunity to get a real good evaluation for this team over the last stretch. So you can go that route, or you can also say, well, everybody else is dealing with it too, with COVID and everything. So I see both sides of it in terms of you want to give the Jazz a bit of a pass, but then also understand that everybody else in the NBA is dealing with it. Nobody's going to give you any sympathy for what you're going through.
Yeah, no, you bring up some great points, Scotty, that are probably plaguing the locker room in the minds of the Jazz. Danny Ainge, you just said, is he's aggressive, and he will make changes and cut ties because what is it? It's all about one thing, and that's it, winning a championship, which Ryan Smith made very clear when he took the team away from the Millers, bought the team from the Millers. So how much of an impact does that have is if this team is going to be broken up? I don't know. I mean, does it lay on you? Yeah, I'm sure it does because this group has basically been all in. And now with this situation that hit late, had it hit earlier, and I'm thinking maybe this isn't a real conversation.
Yeah,
totally. I think that being the last in the line of the COVID roster hit.
Major effects.
Has made a major, makes this a major talking point, right?
Yep.
Because everyone else had gone through it except the Utah Jazz, and they were like, hey, wow, we're expecting it. When will it impact us? And it did. So you make a great point. How does Danny view the Jazz as a whole team or a half a team, and does he give it time to put every piece back together before you can make some of those decisions? That's a great question, and only a very small group of execs actually have the answer or will have the answer to that when it comes down to it. But it's a trying time. The Jazz have been through a lot of this over the last couple of years. I mean, I think of Oklahoma City still. It's going to be in my brain forever, on that March 11th night in OKC, and then the bubble, and then the plane trip to Memphis, and the Birds, and then, COVID hits again, and then, knocks down half your team during a very trying time where you're trying to continue a win streak, and then you lose confidence, and how do you gain it back? I mean, this team's been through some trying times. I'm not saying other teams haven't either. I mean, but man, it just keeps coming at you, and you don't want to make excuses, but at the same time, you still have to put the fact. You have to draw out the facts, right? That it is trying. You thought this team was deep, but even when you lose a part of your bench, two important cogs of your bench, in Gay or Whiteside. you don't get a real chance to look at Jared Butler much, and Pascal's been used sparingly, but it's because of, you know, lineup situations. I get that, but there's all sorts of talk out there of what's wrong, what can be done. But the other, the guys that are and people that are in control, hands, you know this in a professional level, is you can't just make off-the-hip decisions. I mean, I think that's where the Jazz have been great for so long. Sometimes, you know, criticized for not being uber aggressive, but now what if they were? Would they be criticized for that as well? Because there's a lot of fan favorites out there with this club. A lot of interesting, fun personalities. But at the same time, the ultimate goal is what?
Win.
Win.
Yeah.
Postseason.
That's it.
Postseason,
you know,
wins.
It's really interesting time to see what new ownership, a new impactful, you know, CEO of Utah Jazz basketball, what his thoughts are, what he wants to do, or what he will talk to Ryan about, and Justin Zanuck and Coach Quinn Snyder, and what directions they go. Or do you just ride this out and say, hey, look, we got a good core, and this can work. But it's hard to get a real feel when you don't have your full complement. And that's the problem, is that the Jazz have lost games they should have won and they would have won. But when you don't have players on the floor and you have 47 points offensively off the floor, and then you focus on lack of defense, and that, you know, that Rudy Gobert can't protect everything, right? And that's the bottom line to the truth of it. He's great at what he does, but also he needs help. And that's something that people have to realize too.
Well, I would caution everybody to draw a ultimate conclusion in the middle of January on this Jazz team, including Jazz management.
Point. Yeah,
I just, you're middle January, you're in the doldrums, you're just a couple of weeks away from All-Star break. I went through the six losses, starting with Toronto, and I went through Pacers, Pistons, Cavs, Lakers, and Houston, and I talked about the talent that was off the court. And as I went through and listed through all of it, Buller, because I'm done jumping to conclusions with sports teams. Like, I really want to put the work in and try to be as accurate as I can with an opinion. And as I went through it, the thing I came out of it with was, I caution everybody, caution myself, to not just jump in and say, oh, blow it up, get it done at the deadline, make sure you've got trades, moves, whatever you got to do. I just don't think that right now is the time to evaluate. Now, I'm sure they've got something circled. Like, I would expect Donovan Mitchell to be back Sunday against Golden State when they start this road trip. And maybe Gobert's back, hopefully, or if he's out with this ankle issue, whatever the situation is tonight. Maybe there's an evaluation period somewhere in here. But I don't think between January 7th and what we're going to see tonight against Detroit, this is not a time. This is just my opinion. It's not at the time to knee-jerk or to be a heavy evaluation, Bowler.
No, it's a smart comment, Hans. And again, fans want to win now, and I understand the frustration because they see the potential of this team, and then, of course, what probably stings the most is big leads lost. Like in Detroit, you're up 22 and you lose by 10. That's hard to explain a 32-point turnaround, right? In the NBA, but it is the NBA, and leads are lost all the time, not just by the Utah Jazz, but by the league. I mean, that's the power of the three, and the fact that one quarter can actually, you know, run you off the floor, and that's part of it, in my opinion, too. But look, fans want a fix now. I think it's common for all of us to think about, well, you know, what if you move this piece, brought that piece, and that's it? That's gonna fix it. But you know what? You have to look at numbers, salaries, right? Trades, what they bring, chemistry, the personality. Does he fit? Does he not? Would he disrupt? Would it be a defensive stopper that the Jazz are? Everyone's looking for, by the way, a wing defender. By the way, can I just make that point clear?
Yeah.
Everyone wants the same thing the Jazz may need. So how do you make that work? It's not easy, and to match up the salary structures are crazy. So, you know, even though you can say, I've got an idea, great, it's an idea, but it doesn't mean it's a fix or it's going to work, because there's multiple issues you have to go into making a trade and the impact it has on the rest of the locker room. So, you know, be careful with that is my point, too. I understand the frustration, and I think I got to applaud Quinn. Whether, you know, Some people are for or against. I get it. That's what a head coach's job is. But he's kept his cool and calm and try to be as precise and focused as he can. Look, you can attack a team and take them apart in a press conference, but what good does it do ultimately, right? He's smart enough to realize that you can't lose a guy right now. And that's part of, I think, Quinn's strength, is that he can read personalities and try to understand what direction they need to go. And that's another part of it. You know, I've read stories, well, Quinn's not aggressive enough. Look, Quinn's got to make substitution patterns. Look, I'm not in that pay bracket, right, to make those decisions. I think we all kind of think we know what to do. But, again, the inner workings behind the scenes, I can tell you from my experience, is incredible. It's high level. It's high stress. And there's more to this than what most of us get a chance to see. And that's just the truth of it. And hopefully it works itself out. If not, then you have, you know, then those decisions are made by people who are hired to make those decisions. And Quinn Snyder will coach those players, by the way, that the executive level decides to either stay or go with a particular player or more, or who they bring in. He'll be asked, and obviously that's his job, right, Hans and Scotty? Coach the players that you're given, and then you move forward from there.
So, Bowler, I had to produce that made it sound like it was something I didn't want to do, but I got to produce the original Big Show with you and Gordon back in the day.
Right.
And we'd give away tickets, and then you'd say, you know, I'd say caller number 12. And you're like, no. We're going to do caller number, and then you'd make up some number. I have got two tickets to the Jazz and Phoenix coming up next week.
Yeah.
Lloyd's got to answer the calls. What is the correct caller that will win tickets?
Look, I'm going to do this for the NBA Player of the Month of December. I'm going to go, sorry, Lloyd, caller 45.
Caller number 45 right now. 855-340-ZONE. That's 855-340-ZONE. And hopefully you'll see Donovan back in the lineup by that Phoenix game coming up next week.
Well, I know that there will be, you know, hopefully Donovan will be at the game tonight, and we're not in street clothes, just in support of his club. But yeah, sorry, Lloyd, but for honoring his first ever, you know, Player of the Month award, I believe 45 is in good stead for whomever may be lucky to be that 45th caller.
There you go.
What I'm saying is, they're going to have to earn it.
Yeah, I like it.
People start dialing in about 20 minutes.
I'm sorry, Lloyd.
Much like Sandra Bullock earned that. Well, I don't know. She won an Academy Award.
Do we ever find out how much she made, how much the box office was in Proposal or anything?
Oh, I can find out the Proposal.
You know, I think, you know, we can go around in circles with this, but I think that the truth of it is Demolition Man was still the first time that we all got to understand how good she is at what she does.
Wow, the Proposal made $317 million.
Mm. Enough said.
It beat Demolition Man?
It doubled Demolition Man.
Let's be careful with doubled.
Well, I mean, what's 150? I mean, what was 150?
159.
Times 2 is 300. And it made 317, so...
Oh, yeah. I mean, you're $1 million offhand from doubled up on Demolition.
I mean, you might be able to say inflation may have inflated those numbers a little bit because there was 14 years difference between those two movies.
She's not aging. I don't know what's going on with her, but she's not aging. If there was 14 years in between the two, she doesn't look much different.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Bowler. Appreciate it.
Bowler, thanks, brother.
She's frozen in time.
Yep. Yeah, Demolition Man reference. Yes!
Hey, guys, we'll see you on TV tonight, 6:30 pregame, 7 o'clock tip, okay?
You got it.
We'll be there.
Greg Bowler-Jack right here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone and the Zone Sports Network.